Accession number 28413, Reel 3.
Mr. Sowler, Reel 3. We're talking about the items that they issued you with. Housewife was...
Yes, housewife, everything in fact.
That was your needles and threads? And
yes,
so
definitely.
Button stick? Was that part of your...
I think you have to provide your own. I'm not sure. I think so.
And things like, your toothpaste and your black boot polish. Was that issued or did you have to buy it?
You had to buy it, but you got issued, of course, with all your boot brushes, etc.
Now, keeping the barracks clean, how did you do that? You arrived in a very highly polished situation, but you'd have to keep it there, presumably.
Yes, and I can't remember, to be quite honest.
I think,
it was kept clean, but probably had to bump it every day, I'm not sure.
Where was your uniform and all your items kept? And did you have a cupboard of any kind?
Oh, good Lord, no. It was just a room. Everything else went in your kit bag.
It must be difficult to have kept creases then.
Never found any problem.
Was it a communal iron for ironing creases?
Oh, good Lord, never went as far as that.
Was there any furniture in the room?
None.
Not a thing, not even a table?
No.
Now, how was it heated?
Well, I don't know, because it was August and it was quite warm. It was a nice summer.
Relationships within the room, you see, you're all young men, obviously.
Yep.
Some of those would be conscripted rather than volunteered.
Probably, but we all got on very well.
Any that showed any homesickness away from home for the first time?
I don't think so, really.
And was there any bullying, anyone or more than one that tried to bully you?
Oh, no. No, everybody got on remarkably well. And this Sergeant Jewell said we were the best lot of them all, which we believed, and we were prepared to show him we were. And that's the way it went. It was esprit de corps, definitely.
This would be basic training?
Yes.
What form did that take?
The main thing is never to make sure that you were never left with nothing to do. You did drill, square bashing up and down, up and down, up and down. You took a Bren gun to bits and put it back together again. You did various things like fixing up telephones. Always there was something that kept you going all the time. Cross-country runs, night schemes, everything to keep you on the go. And I was very fit, mind, fortunately. I enjoyed it.
And the drills, what type of drilling were you given?
Oh, left, right, slope arms, present arms, trail arms, up, down, up, down, up, down, all the time. And after about 45 minutes of that, it's fairly tiring.
How did you take to living cheek to jowl with a whole lot of young men? And
strange enough, I'd been a loner all my life, and I loved it, to be quite honest. No trouble at all. Never made any wild friends, but got on well with everybody. I mean, after all, I don't suppose there was a railway enthusiast among the lot.
Did you try to find out if there's a railway enthusiast
amongst
them?
No, I kept my own life to myself. Just joined in the general chatter amongst everybody.
Right. You were going to say that, you know?
One thing we did was to have ability tests, sort of fitting blocks into shapes and all that sort of thing. We had a full morning of that, because I remember reading the officer who was doing it notes upside down. He said that I would be a person who would be quite happy to work by myself. I thought, how true you are. That was the sort of thing. You had everything. They certainly... And as I say, we had a very good sergeant.
What time was Ravalli?
As far as I can remember, it was either 6 or 6.30.
And the first thing you did when you were woken?
You got dressed, shaved, etc. And ready for breakfast.
Did you have hot water laid on for you?
At that time, yes.
Now, breakfast would be what time?
I should imagine about 7.30, something like that.
Did you march to the dining hall, or did you just wander over?
Can't remember, to be quite honest.
What would you get for breakfast?
No, I'm afraid all that is rather vague in my mind now.
So you mentioned that you did drills and rifle training, etc., which is basic training.
Yes, of course. And we also went on the range.
Was this, since you had a DLI instructor, were they training you at the Durham Light Infantry fast pace?
I don't think so. I think we did 120 to the minute, not 160.
So on the range, you say you went, what were you doing on the range? What distances were you firing? And
we fired anything up to 600 yards, with and without a respirator. I thought it was a miracle I could even hit the target at 600 yards with a respirator on. We also had a go with a Bren gun. Fired, I think, in all about 50 rounds. And we also had a go with a hand grenade. And that was the first and last time I ever had any ammunition in the army. Never had any after that.
Did you do any bayonet training?
Yes, very half-heartedly, I must admit.
What form did that take? How was it?
Dummies, you know, they charged.
And we asked to scream when you charged and...
Can't remember. Nobody took it very seriously, I must admit.
Did all this training take part through the morning session to lunchtime? Is that your main training time?
Oh no, it took all day.
So you would have a lunch break, and again, obviously army meals, presumably.
Yes.
You can remember again any of the food that we've given you with?
No, not really.
It was adequate.
Oh, definitely adequate. You had a naffy break on the morning, of course. Naffy rock cakes, which I liked.
Afternoon, again, you'd be into drills and so forth. Mm. And I think you'd probably have quite a bit of sport, did you?
No, not a lot. None that I can think of. Can't think of any games like football or anything like that. No.
And what time would you work in day end?
Again, I really couldn't tell you, but it would be fairly late in the afternoon.
And how would you fill your evenings in?
Writing letters, mainly. Down to the naffy.
Cleaning your equipment?
Oh, well, yes, that was always another job.
Can you recall any of the punishments that you might get or did get?
I never had any all the time I was in the army. I always managed to keep well clear. They always said to you, if they know you're just as a number, you're all right. If they know your name, watch out. I made sure they only knew my number.
And what was that?
672. 142-18672.
Now 672 were your last three?
Yes.
What pay did you get for those in early stages?
14 shillings a week, of which 3 and 6 went home.
That was your allowance?
Hmm.
And did you have backroom damages taken off as well?
No. Not that I know there was any backroom damages.
How long did the basic training period last?
6 weeks.
And was there a parade, a marching off parade at the end of it all, final parade?
Not that I can remember.
So 6 weeks, basically you were doing drills and rifles, as you've said.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you go to after the 6 weeks?
After 6 weeks, they decided I should be an instrument mechanic. And we went to some more barracks nearby. They reckoned they'd been condemned after the First World War, and I could really imagine it. We were in two-tiered bunks. The floor was so black with age, and the bunks were so close together, You only had to put your hand out and you could touch the next door and slide down. There was no hot water. And there was at least 30 of us in this one room. There would probably only be about 6 feet between the bunks on either side. And we were in there for our instrument mechanic course, which was about 6 months.
And was this still in Catrick Camp?
Yes.
And was it, again, brick or stone-built hut?
Stone-built.
But very old, as you said.
Well, they should have been knocked down about 1919, you know.
Was there any heating in them?
Yes, there was 28 pounds of coke a week.
And that going to a...
Into a stove in the middle.
A barrel stove. Mm. And did you have to keep that clean?
Oh, yes. Yes.
It's been difficult trying to keep an old building clean, anyway.
Oh, it was near hopeless. And reveille was at 6 o'clock. And by 6:30, you were outside for roll call. And Catrick, at that, because these, I can't remember the name of these lines, but they were near Camel. But you were quite a long way up. You were very high up in the world. And
they were tall buildings, were they?
No, no.
Is that what you mean? No,
no. You were, lateral elevation, you could see right over to Teesside, was so high. And the thing is, Catrick, in the winter, it was cold. Very cold. But we did the instrument mechanics course.
Now, can you take me through the course?
Yes.
What they taught you in the order that you taught it, you were taught it?
Well, the thing is, the course was in one-week parcels. Each week you did something different. And there was one little catch to it. At the end of each week, you had a test. If you passed the test, you went on to the next week. If you didn't pass the test, you had to repeat that week. Fair enough. But it just meant your leave went 1 week further away from you. So everybody passed. You did everything. You did line instruments, telephones, teleprinters, switchboards, radio, various radios of that time. I was never very much good at radio, but I managed to pass. They covered pretty thoroughly everything. It went on for 6 months.
And what were they teaching? I mean, is it just to use them? Or?
Well, no, you had to learn to strip them down, repair, they'd put faults on them, and you had to find the faults and so on.
Were any particularly difficult and intricate?
I didn't care for radio. Never very keen on the radio.
Do you recall the name or the number of the sets that you, radio sets?
Yes, the R107, I think, was the number, because that had a range that you could pick up short wave. And so you could pick up American jazz stations on it. But of course it had a red light on, and you weren't allowed to do that. So what you did was you unscrewed the red light, so it just went off. And you put it on very low. The instructor would listen. Somebody's got a radio on. He'd walk around the room. All the red lights were off. He got away with it. But you had to be very careful. And we enjoyed the music.
So stripping down, what was the first instrument you start with? You've come on this course that you're in your first day, and they say, well, this is what you're working with.
Yeah, I have no idea. I can't remember
the order of it.
No.
But it was basically stripping down and repairing and putting it together.
Mm, yes. It was pretty extensive and pretty thorough.
Telephones, did that include repairing the lines?
No,
that
was...
They would need lines, wouldn't they?
That was a lineman's job. There were lines on, you see.
Yours was instrumental work, in effect.
See, there were linemen, there were line mechanics, and there was high-speed wireless mechanics. There was a various variety, you know.
Teleprinters, can you describe them? What did they look like in those days?
Well, they were just like a mechanical typewriter, really. They would do a maximum of 66 words a minute. And they had a big circular piece, which contained all the letters. One would drop when you push the appropriate letter, and the thing is, it would stop the clutch going round and round. It would then engage, and then there would be a hammer come and strike the letter. The letter was picked by five fingers sticking up, which went down in a certain order, and that was the one which determined which letter you're going to produce. Quite a complicated machine. I think I reckon there was about 2,000 parts to it. And although we didn't do it then, I mean, I got to the stage where I could strip one right down to the bitter end and put it all back together.
So it was like a typewriter. You were pressing the letters for your message.
Mm-hmm.
Then what happened? How did the message go to where?
Well, the thing is, as you pressed that down, there were five long rods which went in a certain order depending upon which letter you'd pressed down. These then went to a part of the left-hand side of the machine which then transmitted a coded signal which was passed over a wire, of course, to another printer at the other end. Its machine, a code at the other end, picked it up and printed the appropriate letter.
And was this a wide range? Did they could be passed over?
Well, we were working from Calcutta to Delhi and places like that, Calcutta to Samada Bazaar and all over.
Were they efficient machines for the day?
Very. Very.
What would might be the most common fault that you found that you had to... You found yourself working on?
The worst fault was the fact that when you pressed a letter, there was a thing spinning in front of the paper, and when you pressed the appropriate letter, a clutch engaged. They were only small, 3/16 sort of thing, or 1/4 inch at the most, this clutch. And eventually it suffered metal fatigue. Well, you can imagine that with the amount of work it was doing. And Creed's, who made teleprinters in London, had been bombed. There was no spares. We made our own, and it was a job. Cutting up old springs from clocks to make this bit, and then trying to rivet them with little small aluminium rivets. You learned to be a jack of all trades, believe me.
Very, very precise work.
Very. Oh, yes, I mean, you're working on 3/16, 1/4 inch, you know, and with minimum tools. I mean, cutting up watch springs or clock springs is not an easy job.
Which particular instrument or machine, was your favourite for working on?
Oh, I loved teleprinters. I worked on teleprinters, and I was also a cipher mechanic.
Now, what's the role of a cipher mechanic? Can you explain that?
Well, it covers all the maintenance of the machine except for the secret part. You were not allowed to touch... Well, that was taken away. You're not allowed to have anything to do with that. To my mind, it was big, bulky, and almost Heath Robinson. I don't know whether I should say any more.
Well, I was going to ask you, can you describe it to me? How did it function?
Well, just by the fact, I mean, there's they sat in front of it, presumably, and the message came out in clear on one end and cipher the other end. And that was it. And it was, as I say, a very Heath Robinson.
Your end, you were basically just on repairing and looking after
things. Yes, I mean, The letters were operated by solenoids, you know, and there was a motor to run it, of course, things like that. And it was very heavy.
So the operator at the end sending the message, would he or she be writing it in English, letters in English, and then they would coded at the other end, or was, were they writing it in codes and it was going through coded?
We were never left.
You never knew what
never had. Well, whatever I knew, I didn't know, if you understand what I mean.
Yes, yes.
Yes, all I know is they were very heavy and they were pigs.
And again, the same range and distance as a teleprinter. You could, you know, you
presumably they sent, they made a message and then the message was sent. Mm-hmm. See, the message would be sent off in code.
Yes, and received in code. And
received, yes. That was all to do with them, nothing. Yeah. I went for, well, it's getting ahead of myself. I went for a week on a cipher course.
Well, we may as well deal with it. What were they teaching you?
Well, about the cipher machine in general, you know, less all the secret parts of it.
But this cipher course, was this again a mechanics business? It wasn't actually being a cipher clerk or a cipher?
No, this was a separate, after I'd been in the army some time. Yes.
And were you... presumably, the ciphering clerk, for want of a better name, would have to swear to secrecy, official secrecy.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah? Oh, my goodness me, yes.
But did you have to?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Oh, yes. Not that I knew anything of the secret part at all, but you were definitely under... Well, I suppose that was in case you saw anything that you shouldn't see. Yeah.
And presumably the most secret part of all would be the code.
Which you never saw.
Which was being used. Hmm. Do you know whether the code changed regularly? Or
not a clue. Nothing to do with us at all. Nope.
So you finished this, you did this training with all these instruments.
Yes.
So how long did the course last?
It lasted till April 43, that's 6 months. And then the fun started. And the next bit is rather funny. We were sent, about six of us, and told to go to this unit in London. And the only address we got was some L of C, I can never remember the one, Home Forces, which is hardly a very good address. But we had to get the train to Wimbledon. So off we went. Never been to London before. Marvellous. Got to Wimbledon. Ticket collector was at the gate. One of the lads said, "Look, we're supposed to go to this unit." He just says, "Home Forces." "Oh," he says, "I know where that is." He says, "It's up at Rains Park," and he told us where to go. So off we trooped. Durham Road, Rains Park of all places. Quite nice houses. Empty, but with two-tier bunks in. Lower two-tier bunks. And we walked in, and I think it was a Saturday afternoon. Company clerk looked, you know. "Who the devil are you?" So we said, "We've come, we see," and we all produced our requisite papers. "Right, oh, find yourself somewhere in one of these houses with a two-tier bunks. Lovely." So come the, that was the weekend. We reported for duty on the Monday. Everybody sort of, you know, "What on earth are we going to do with these six, you know? We're all line mechanics." So, what we did, I don't really know, but there was nothing for us to do, really. The only beauty of it was, from Rains Park to Wimbledon, where the Naffy was about a mile. And there was a footpath which ran right alongside the Southern Railway main line. To me, it was marvellous. And there was nothing to do. We just sort of did any odd jobs that people wanted us to. And it seemed all very strange. And then suddenly, we got a notice to say we had to go on embarkation leave to Ulverston. It was a lovely summer, really warm. And it was Primrose Day, you know, those little primrose things. Princess Alexander's Day, I think it is. We all bought one of those, we stuck them in our forage caps, and off we went to Ulverston. Up to Carnforth, well known from Brief Encounter, along to Ulverston, Yes, come the about July time, we were told we had to go to Wolverston for embarkation. And as I said before, we had these little primrose rosettes in our hat. Turned up at Wolverston, walked into the company office, clerk there, looked at her, says, "Oh my God," he said, "get those out of your hat quick." The CO was quite a disciplinarian. So, having taken the hint, we got them out a bit quick, and he asked who we were, we told him. And so we were in the old cement works, I think, and we had to have all the usual inoculations and what have you. And unfortunately, I had trouble with my nose. I'd had to go to the hospital in Wimbledon because earlier on in my life I'd had an accident on the bike. Made a great gash at the top of my nose, you can still see it. Surgeon in Wimbledon put 6 stitches in, he really worked hard on it, and he said, "For heaven's sake, when you come, don't let anybody take them out, I'll do it." And he put gentian violet over it. Of course, this was all the situation that I was in when I arrived at Ulverston. The MO had a look at it. He said, "You're not going on embarkation leave until I've made sure that's all right." He thereupon got some spirit and he rubbed 2 of the stitches out, which didn't please me very much. And he sort of just whipped the other 4 out, and that's why it is as it is today. And so we duly went on embarkation leave.
How much leave was that? How
many days? Just a week.
So you'd be going home and to your parents, and going away. You wouldn't know where you're going.
Oh, no. Oh, there's more to it, and it gets funnier. Do I carry on?
Yes.
So I went to Carnforth on the way home. At Carnforth, you could have a free cup of tea. Well, you could have. But unfortunately, most of the cups had disappeared on trains because people hadn't had time to finish. So you had your tea out of a jam jar. Tasted just as good. Carnforth to Penrith, changed trains there, over the Pennines, Stainmore to Darlington, and home. Was at home nearly a week, got a message saying, "Come back." So, same old caper, back we came. Said, "Sorry, we don't need you. We're sending you back to Raines Park." So, back to Carnforth, on mid train, down to Wimbledon, and off to Raines Park again. And then the blow fell. We'd been sent to the wrong place in the first place. We should have gone to Hounslow. And so then started our spell in Hounslow.
You 7 days. Can we just go back to your leave? How did your parents take the fact that you were going abroad?
Didn't bother.
They were quite...
With me, they just resigned themselves to anything. Then you, I think I must have been a problem child. I don't know.
Which regiment were you in at this point in time?
Just signals. It was
the Royal Signals.
Yes, some LFC, but I can't remember which.